Computer, this is Data.
I'm an android. I'm
Rangers League basketball.
I was processing all of the information.
Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Rangers League basketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Hello and welcome back to the Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast. My name is Tom Z, joined again by Tim, aka Cranges McBasketball, who held it down nicely. Thank you, Tim, for holding it down while I took a week off. You know, it's kind of that time of the season. We're not getting a lot of news, even though we are still getting some because it's the Lakers and there's always... They didn't want me back, but Braun wanted me back. But now I'm in Dallas. My name's Jared Dudley. You know, we just did a whole thing on social media because no one has anything else to care about. How are you, Tim?
Yeah, I'm doing. Hey, Cranges McPodskiball over here. I'll hold it down while we load manage throughout like the dog days of summer, as they call it, the baseball season. I'm doing well, trying to keep up with the news. Lots of little moves around the margins these past couple weeks, which you know I love and try to make other people like. So I'm enjoying it, but I think we have a pretty fun topic today, because today we're talking about stuff that matters, and I have a new nominee for the Ian Clark, you know, out of the bargain bin potential upside that's going to flame out player of the year as well. So I'm pumped about that.
It's a long title. You should work on that. Okay. You know, I mean, it's accurate. I appreciate the context, but you know, something more pithy. So a couple things, right? I didn't get a chance to touch on a couple of things. The Dudley thing, I don't want to talk about. It doesn't matter that much. Good credit to him. Thank you for your service. You're an assistant coach now. You're not an NBA player anymore. I'm sorry. You know, it's just what I think is the truth. The Dudley thing happened. Obviously, last time we spoke, Rajon Rondo was a Los Angeles Clipper. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can get to this later. I feel like it's not surprising at all if he winds up back in the Lakers. Even having said what Dudley used as an excuse that they wanted like youthful athleticism with their last couple spots, which I think is right. The right process. A team with Carmelo Anthony and Dwight Howard and Russell Westbrook doesn't need a Jared Dudley the same as a Kyle Kuzma, KCP, Caruso, kind of, you know, getting all the other guys, the other pieces, the Keefs, the, you know, other guys on the same page as LeBron, and LeBron not having to do some of that, all that leadership heavy lifting. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Rajon Rondo back, because I think he can still play basketball on the court in some capacity. And as we'll get into it with these lineups, you know, having somebody on the court who can direct people around, for as much as I hated regular season Rondo a lot of times, and having a year without him last year, I think showed kind of his value to that team.
Yeah, so if he'll randomly shoot like 40% on threes again in the playoffs, we will also take that. But I have to like recalibrate my mind to what regular season Rondo was like.
Oh, it's happening.
He left us with it was the opposite of a bitter taste left in my mouth after that playoff run. So yeah, I'm anticipating it'll happen.
Yeah,
we'll see. I think he still has, you know, clearly some IQ and he still has some strengths on the court that could be helpful.
I'll tell Rajon Rondo you think he has some IQ next time I see him. I'm sure he'll love that. No, just joshing you. No, what we want to talk about today is a non-LeBron lineup minutes, the way those will look now this season. You know, they haven't looked great the last couple of years. They were worse last year than the year before. But for 2 years, Tim, since we came back on this pod, we've talked about how when the ball gets dumped into Anthony Davis in the first 5-6 minutes of the second quarter, you know, the offense just gets awful. Not just, you know, below average, like straight up awful. The process is bad. The kinds of shots they get and are not great. And I'm not saying mid-range shots are bad. It's mid-range shots with 15, 16, you know, 14 left in the shot clock without really much player movement. You know all the possessions we've talked about, right? You know, setting this up for the listener, right? But how does this team look significantly different with Russell Westbrook and probably in what we are assuming in most of these lineups? You know, no LeBron comes out first you know, plays first 6 minutes, first quarter, sits, you know, maybe. And so what's that first lineup look like? I want to talk about these lineups sit. And shouts to Alex Regla. We've had him on this podcast. Great podcaster, writer, Silver Screen and Roll. Follow his stuff. Follow him on Twitter. All that. We're going to base this kind of off of an article he wrote laying out a couple of lineups. And we'll get Tim and I to get some other lineups out there too. But I wanted context for which lineups when as well. You know, end of the first, you still have the other team's starters on the floor quite often. Mm-hmm. Their best starters. So to me, someone like a Bazemore coming in for LeBron makes sense. You know, maybe you're starting him. Whoever you're not starting between Bazemore and Ariza coming in to replace LeBron. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to think about it through the process of why and when. So maybe we'll have some, you know, middle of late second before he comes back, you know, for to close out the half lineup. That might look a little bit more like Nunn and Monk. So I just want to throw that out there. We'll talk about that when I might see expect to see lineups like this at different points in the game. But what's like the first lineup you want to talk about as far as, well, the first one Alex laid out, right? Let's do that. The Smash Mouth one. You have Russell Westbrook, Malik Monk, THT, Melo, and Dwight at the five. So that one immediately screams poor defense to me. I know you have Dwight Howard to help clean some things up, but the best other defender in that lot is probably THT at the point of attack. But talk me through that lineup. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, defensively is where I see the most issues with this group. Offensively, you're looking at, you've got some spacing with Melo. You have Monk, who had that really good shooting season this past year. If he doesn't shoot well next year, this lineup won't work because there just won't be any spacing. But assuming Monk and Melo are your spacers, you have Russ and THT as guys that can like really get to the rim. Howard has a good finisher. And then Monk is somebody who, you know, drive and kick it out to him. Him operating with a small advantage to start with, he'll be able to pump fake and go, or just take that pass out and then drive a second time. And he has some ability to get to the rim and score at the rim in a way that a lot of our guys last season didn't. If you kick it out to KCP or you kick it out to Danny Green a couple of years ago, some of these guys, either they catch it and they're open and they score, or they catch it and there's some hesitation because there's kind of a closeout happening and they're not guys that are generally taking harder shots. So you pass it to them, they pump fake, and then they drive, and it's like, uh-oh, time, when Danny Green's driving into the lane and needs to make a decision or read a defense or try to hit a floater or something like that. Malik Monk is a huge step up in that secondary element of things. And as long as he's slotted into that secondary creation kind of role within this lineup, I love what he's able to provide. So I like it. This group, if we look at some of the data on this group compared, using our lineup creator tool at B-Ball Index, compared to the lineup data that we have in our database for last season, this would be the best group at getting to the rim compared to any non-LeBron lineup last season. And from a spacing standpoint, even with a couple guys in here that, you know, Howard's not providing spacing, Russ a little questionable, THT questionable, it still would have been above average for spacing on last season's team, which is crazy to me. But that just tells us, it's not to say that this is a really good spacing lineup, but just kind of tells us what we were working with last year. And the finishing at the rim, the playmaking, both would have been above average compared to last season's lineups. So offensively, I think it could work. Defensively, I just see it as a really rough group with some poor rotational defenders, especially. So if anybody gets beat and there's a drive, a kick, and a drive, that's where the other team is going to make their money.
Yeah, Alex mentions this, you know, this lineup's ability to get to the rim, 98th percentile, is incredible. You know, pretty much everybody except Melo can get to the rim and finish well. That's often useful against second units and, you know, in the dog days of the season. But there's not really a scenario in crunch time or in playoffs. I think this lineup is super practical. Obviously, it's no LeBron and no AD, which we'll get to some lineups with AD at the five coming up here. This, you know, implies to me that Dwight Howard would be playing more than I think we expect him to. So getting a shift at the top of the second quarter or somewhere before the end of the second quarter. Mm-hmm. And I don't, I'm not saying I, you know, we think he's going to get 12 minutes. He could on certain nights for sure. You know, team depending, matchup depending. But I think this kind of lineup for me is like, are we going to take LeBron and AD out at the beginning of the first? Probably not. This is probably a second quarter lineup. Don't love it in the third because you don't have a lot of time to kind of make up some points back. If defensively this unit does give up a lot, you know, in a short amount of time. So I don't know. I'm pretty lukewarm on this, but I get it. I do get it.
Here's why I see this one being important. Assuming the Lakers are starting Russ, they're starting, we'll say Gasol and AD as their front court. They've got LeBron in there at the three, and I don't know, Bazemore or Monk or Ellington, I guess is going to be that starting two guard or none potentially. This is a group that has three or four bench guys in it, and like you're saying, I don't see a lot of instances when we look at the normal flow of rotations where you're going to have a lineup with that many of your bench guys in at the same time. But where I can see a group like this being viable, being really important, is if you really wanted to, you could play some of those super starter heavy groups more often and not have to stagger as much. Like if your starting lineup is just killing it, or your starters minus Ross and put none in there is just killing it, you can play that group more often and not worry about having to basically shift whole lines like hockey style. If you have a group like this that mostly bench guys can come off the bench and still be effective. So that's where I see it. Like if you can have a super solid, almost all bench group, that enables you to play heavier minutes with your best lineups more often, which I think would be really cool. So I agree with you that it's tough to see exactly how it fits in. After this, I need to go play around in our rotation tool and like try to fit some of these specific lineups we're talking about today into that. Mm-hmm. But I agree that it's going to be like the dog days of the season,
sure,
or like second or third quarter somewhere in just a couple of like almost minutes they would just completely be punting in previous seasons with a lot of like heavy bench guys. This is a group that I think is viable, and I think that's just important to... You not only have to have like the really good lineups out there most often, but you have to avoid the really bad lineups. And this group at least should be good enough offensively to tread water, even if the defense is bad, if not be a solid group with a positive net rating.
Yeah. I mean, the spacing is there compared to last year. We definitely have it's okay. It's not amazing, but it the options we have now, even with a Melo stretch kind of four, a Monk, you know, just somebody who can reasonably shoot, catch and shoot. Mm-hmm. You know, THT obviously and Russ are, you know, very streaky and can be very good for stretches. And I feel like if one of those two can bring their spacing up a little bit more, this lineup has a lot more viability long term. But ultimately, what we're probably talking, Tim, I don't know if you want to talk that lineup anymore.
I think the last thing I'd say is I can see Monk out and none in also. You know, looking similar, the same kind of similar spacing, similar ability to get to the rim, similar ability to finish at the rim. So that it gives you the same kind of thing that this lineup does. But I do like Monk within this one. And a good piece of context is this as a non-LeBron, non-AD group, if it's even like a neutral net rating, that's like a big improvement because last year with Bron and AD both sitting, the Lakers in non-garbage time had a minus 15.5 net rating. In the season before that, had a minus 20. So if we can like having more groups like this that can just be fine with some upside is huge, I think, for this team. So that helps me frame and be like, yeah, I'm more excited about this group, not within just that vacuum, but within the context of like what we're used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Moving on to the Anthony Davis at the five in space lineup, you know, surrounding AD with good spacing as best you can and kind of living with the other stuff, as in like none is the only real player that can get to the rim in and finish at the rim at a high rate, other than, you know, AD can finish at the rim, but him getting there on his own is another question. So this is the kind of lineup that we saw like last year. They're not the same players, obviously. No one's returning, but it's the same like AD and four bench guys, you know, Caruso, Kuzma, Trez, or you know, another five, someone, some, you know, when AD moved up to the five, it was like Keef in there, I guess, as well.
Yeah,
right?
Keef would be a good one.
Yeah. So that's your Melo kind of comp. I don't know. And granted, I think Alex makes a good point here that I don't think we'll see a lot of AD without Russ and without LeBron lineups. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of lineup you run your offense through AD, and that's what we've seen the last few years. Now, even though the spacing on paper is better, and like you, to your point, there's some better people who can tack closeouts, you know, is this why the Lakers got Russell Westbrook to run a lineup like this? Like, probably not.
So I think that with the shooting that they brought in, a lineup like this can work in a similar way to the one you're referencing for last year, where like the goal is the same. It's AD with some bench guys, mm-hmm. and the goal is get AD the ball. And we talked about how in previous seasons, you know, defenses will double team him or they'll sag off those guys who aren't great shooters. Like the concept didn't match reality. This group, you can run that same idea. You don't have elite playmaking. And I think Russ would help with a group like this, but this provides similar value to the last one we talked about in that you only need one of the three stars. And if you can run this group for some minutes and it's good and it truly gets AD in space, like looking at the shooting with these guys, this would have been the best spaced lineup last season for LA, even including LeBron lineups. Of any lineup that we've seen for the Lakers, this would have had the best spacing according to our lineup tool. So it would give AD better space than he's ever worked with in a Laker uniform. And that gives me hope that we can just see him go to work against some like opposing team bench groups. And then similar to the first one we talked about, it enables you to play more stacked lineups around it that have heavy starter minutes. If Nunn's coming off the bench, if Bazemore's coming off the bench, let's say you're starting Russ, Monk, LeBron, AD and Gasol, or Ariza and AD, this is a group that has four bench guys or three bench guys potentially. So it, in a similar way, this is a good group to have, you know, if you need to, you know, if you need to not have LeBron and not AD out there at the same time, like this is a great fallback option. It's just LeBron with or AD with the best spacing he's ever had.
Yeah. I don't know. I just kind of feel like with this lineup, it's like, all right, we're playing, you know, game 42 and man, Anthony Davis has scored three straight baskets, you know, posting a guy up, getting to the rim, because good spacing and they don't want to double, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there's this again. It's you just play a zone. I don't think there's a creator, like real creator in this lineup outside of Anthony Davis. You can only kind of create for himself and some kickouts. Mm-hmm. I guess it's just falling back into old habits when you got a big portion of your resources spent on someone to help you not fall back into those old habits. And yeah, if LeBron is out, if Russ is out, this is the kind of lineup that was going to have to succeed. But it's more than that to me. It's the lack of playmaking without I guess Bazemore is okay, but he don't really want him making plays with an Anthony Davis on the court. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
This one doesn't do it for me personally because I can see all of the traps that came from a couple years before. And unless Anthony Davis is the bubble mid-range shooter that who can shoot over guys and, you know, really demand a double team, if I'm the other team, I just don't double team.
So here's what I would do with this group. I would Bazemore and Melo. You're standing in the corners. You are stationary shooters. You catch and you shoot. Ellington is someone that we can run off-screen stuff for. That's another potential attack that a lot of these other lineups won't have.
From a Carmelo Anthony down screen?
Carmelo Anthony down screen.
Okay, I just want to be clear. Who's setting the screens in this lineup?
Or AD setting a down screen and then him slipping to the rim. Because Ellington's a good enough shooter that if you put two on him and then this is on an empty side, like an empty side pin down.
Yeah.
With AD then slipping to the rim. Maybe we get a mismatch. Maybe there's just a wide open dump off. That kind of thing. And then get it to Ellington. Either the shot's there. If the shot's not there, dump it right into AD low post and then have him go to work with spacing around him. If they need to kick it out, none can attack a closeout. But the rest of these guys, not as much. But even then, I think the spacing should be, in theory, good enough that it should work. And if they do play zone, have AD post up the middle guy or something. Like, there are ways to attack a zone without AD necessarily needing to, like, isolate or needing these guys to be, like, great playmakers or run a pick and roll. I would find ways to post up AD with this group. He's coming off of a career year as a post player from an efficiency standpoint, even with him not being fully healthy for the year, even with him being double teamed a lot. You know, there's better spacing. I think in theory this could work. It should work. It needs to, like, if AD is a superstar, this needs to work. Superstar with spacing needs to be something we can rely upon. If this doesn't work, the Lakers aren't in a great, like, they don't have the shooting that they think they have, I think is the way I would read this. Or they're getting massively outcoached in some sort of way, where even with better shooting, they're facing double teams and not able to get the ball to open guys or attack it the right way.
Yeah, I think this is definitely the lineup you see when you see teams try to go the Phoenix, Dario Saric at the five. And, you know, we think we can just kind of double and recover and run around you on offense and space the floor, which some teams are doing those small ball fives, not in like the Warriors Draymond way, but just in a we're all switchy and, you know, 6'8 and under guys who can shoot the ball. And
yeah,
this is the, those are the kind of lineups that you want Anthony Davis with space in so he can go to work and get to whatever spot he wants. But if he's taking fadeaway middies and not getting to the rim, it's a problem. It's not still not as efficient as of an offense as it could be.
Yeah. And a lot of it comes down to the fact that, like, Anthony Davis, the player, and Anthony Davis, the idea of the player, aren't quite the same guy between the fact that he doesn't post up hard physically. He doesn't get deep post position. That hurts him. The fact that he's comfortable settling for those mid-range shots that he was lights out with in the playoffs 2 years ago, but for the rest of his career has been nowhere close to. That hurts him. And the fact that when he's a pick and roll guy, when he pops, he doesn't pop to the three-point line. He just kind of stands there at the elbow. That doesn't make him more open. So he does a lot of little things that, even with the great player development and Phil Handy and all that, he's doing these things that don't make it easy for himself. And that has made lineups with theoretical spacing around him not work as well as they should have. This one, I think, fingers crossed, has, like, legit spacing in a way that it doesn't matter as much. But I still agree with you that 80's own, like, tendencies and unwillingness to, like, go actually battle down low with somebody, especially if they're going smaller. Like, if he's facing some sort of power forward playing the five and you can just go post up a 6'7" dude, like, go at him. And if anyone's coming to help, somebody's open. And this is the type of group that, like, last year, if somebody was open, you kick it out to them. If it's even, like, semi-contested, they're probably not going to take it, or they're not going to hit that shot. Like, Alex Caruso was an open shot maker, an open shot taker. Some of these other guys, same way. This group, like, Nunn, Ellington, Melo, they're going to fire away. Bazemore maybe not as much, but these other guys are going to fire away, and they're going to hit a lot of those threes. So it's, in ways, helping to hold up some of those bad habits, but I agree that I can see the path for this group to not be as effective as we'd like them to be.
Just some old bad habit stuff that has me concerned with that lineup, but hopefully we see a different Anthony Davis, because it all comes down to him. Now this next lineup here, it's got, you know, shoot, pass, rinse, repeat, you know, shoot, rinse, pass, repeat, I guess is Alex's phrasing. Sorry, I butchered that. But this one is Russell Westbrook, Monk, Bazemore, Melo, Marc Gasol. Now, I just said a couple months ago, I feel like, I'm not convinced Marc Gasol is coming back to this team. And we didn't hear anything at all about Mark. And then we heard a little bit from Mark Stein that he's kind of, I don't know if contemplating retirement, if talking about going back to Spain.
Not a lock.
Not a lock.
The only information we got. So there's a lot of ambiguity. There's a lot of things it could be. Maybe he doesn't want to play for Fizdale. Maybe he wants to play in Spain for his last year. Maybe he, I don't know, does it? Maybe he thinks he's going to not play as much as he needs to. Maybe he doesn't think he can handle the grind of a season. So many possible routes it could be.
Yes.
Or maybe he plays.
I still think we are in agreement that the Lakers should want him to play, because I think he provides something useful in spacing five, who can do enough you know, rim protection, rebounding, and obviously amazing playmaking that with the team that has a lot better cutters should be featured more, you know, and we were calling for that all last year, seeing Mark in the high post, seeing him work off of movement and player movement, ball movement. But the Lakers didn't need that. He just kind of, you know, picked and popped when he could, did his 12 to 15 minutes and was out of there for the most part. And we're going to need something similar, but more from Mark. And I hope I do like this lineup. Russ, Monk, Baze, Melo, Gasol, shooting all around Russ. You have the ball in his hands a lot. You could do ghost screens with Monk and Baze more and with Melo, you know, then the other ones are in the corners spacing, doing good. Just run pick and roll all day with Mark, pick and pop. Let Russ get downhill. I like this lineup because I think there's a mixture of vet and some youthful legs. Obviously, Westbrook's still athletic. Monk, you know, Bazemore. You have Melo and Gasol at the 4 and 5 are concerning defensively. So this lineup, I think, doesn't have as much defensive worry as like the first one. But it isn't as prolific on offense as the first one. So a little bit less risk, I think, in this lineup, less volatility. It could be solid. Yeah. It could be not great. And depending on matchups. So I just, this one to me, I can see working on a regular basis, at least with Russ and shooting. And that's what we saw from, you know, from when he's been successful the last few times he has.
Yeah. It certainly would provide good spacing. This, again, yet another lineup that would have been the best space lineup for the Lakers last season, even including LeBron lineup. So huge step up there. You combine that with the fact that there are numerous playmakers to varying levels in this group that I think is really helpful in like first attack, you know, pick and pop, pass it out to Mark. If somebody closes out to him, he's going to hit it to someone who's probably a shooter and or can go attack the rim. I agree that defensively it's not going to be a stellar group. Certain guys within this lineup have certain defensive weaknesses. It doesn't kind of coherently, you know, it defensively, I'd have my worries. I don't think it's going to get killed defensively, but I would worry about it. I think Russ is definitely going to need to focus on crashing the boards and helping out on that end. But I love the playmaking and I love the shooting. So I think there's a lot you can do with it. Great call out with the ghost screens. I think that'd be really neat to see. And I don't know, this is a group that I could see being fun. And I like the idea of Mark getting time with Russ to just run pick and pop so that Russ can focus on going at the rim hard with Mark's man having to worry about closing out to him on the perimeter rather than it, there being a guy going under the ball screen and a big man there to wait for Russ. If it's Russ needing to beat his one guy and that big man can't commit, he's going to get to the rim way more often. So I like a lot of what this group has going on.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break here. We're going to get to a couple more lineups and we have Tim's award to give out after this.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, back in from break. Tim, this is kind of a lineup we've talked about a little bit on the pod already. Talking bench lineups. I really like this one as well. You have Russell Westbrook, Nunn, Baze, Ariza, and AD at the five. Obviously, it's AD at the five lineup that to me does not have the concerns of the last AD at the five lineup I mentioned. You have Russell Westbrook in there. You can spam. I mean, AD, Russell pick and rolls if you want. But and there's decent enough spacing. I don't think it's perfect. I'm still, again, kind of, I want to see Ariza be that consistent. I know he's been consistent his whole career, pretty much shooting. I just want to see that not fall off because he's a Laker. You know, knock on wood. Where is it? Not, there's wood. Okay, knocked on the wood. But, you know, on defense, I think this lineup can... I think AD has the ability to cover a lot of these guys' mistakes, and there's some switchability as well at the 4-3-4 and AD. Mm-hmm. So there's some versatility within this that I could see working as like a closing the first quarter lineup. This is what that would look like to me.
Yeah, this is one player removed from being your closing lineup in games. Like Nunn, Bazemore, or Ariza out, replace them with LeBron, and you have a group that you're like, hey, this closes games, is switchable, we love it. So this is close to that, and great call out defensively. I think this group is pretty well set up to switch. I love the fact that like AD, Ariza, and Nunn, from a rotational standpoint, they all do a good job covering for teammates. So if someone does get beat, you're going to force that offense to have to kick it out and reset. And then offensively, it's balanced. It's not the best at anything, but it's really balanced. It would have been, compared to non-LeBron lineups last season, fourth best in playmaking, second best in terms of finishing at the rim, fifth best in spacing. So there's a lot to like about it. And it's a group that I can see getting a lot of minutes in being like not our starting lineup, but like right after our starting lineup, or like either right before or after, you know, a starting group, or right before a closing group, or something like that.
Yeah, I think you could probably even switch THT in here for most of the other guys.
Yeah.
And I don't think you really want Bazemore playing the four. I think, you know, just based, because obviously we have these kind of four guard, like wing guys that could start, it feels like, at the two, right? We have Nunn, Bazemore, you could see Ariza, I guess Ellington, but some of those guys are going to start. So this is not going to be play all through the first quarter. So one of these guys might be sitting. I also don't think THT is going to start. So if you put THT in for like a Bazemore here, how does that look, I guess, in comparison to this lineup?
So the spacing would be worse because, I mean, you're taking a little bit of a step down there. Bazemore is not the greatest spacer in the world. He's been a guy that, you know, can knock down open threes, but he's not like a shooter the way some of these other players are. So it's not you're not dropping off a ton, but it's certainly different. And THT in for Bazemore, I mean, defensively, I think would be okay. At the three, I'd worry about his, you know, being able to rotate if he's not facing some sort of scoring wing where he's on ball a lot. I would worry about THT being in a position where he's needing to rotate a good bit. But offensively, the playmaking would take a step up. The finishing, getting to the rim would take a step up. You would just be working with a little bit worse spacing, but I don't necessarily think it would be awful. But I do think with Ariza, you have someone who's not, he's also not like a legit bona fide shooter. He is somebody that gave like average to below average production on super high quality shots last year. So he's closer to what Lakers fans are used to with prior teams where, you know, guys were slightly underperforming elite shot quality, but because the shot quality was so good, they put up good 3-point percentages. That's more what Ariza is. So if he's one of the two spacers in a lineup, the spacing for the lineup's not going to be all that great.
Yep. I think obviously there's lineups where, you know, you're going to want him out there for defensive purposes, and you can live with the limited spacing that he provides as long as it's some spacing. But yeah, just looking through, I think this lineup is something that we'll absolutely see. When LeBron comes out in the first quarter, I could see it as well in the third quarter. I could just see this, you know, again, to your point, any of these, you know, subbed in for LeBron, you know, between Russ and AD. I can also see Dwight in for some of these guys. If you have a bigger lineup team, you know, and still need a little bit of spacing, shooting, defense, you put Dwight in for, you know, Bazemore. You could still have Ariza kind of play the three and do that reasonably well. Yeah, I think you have Westbrook at the point of attack most of the time, and Nunn kind of off ball chasing some of these other guys. Mm-hmm. I am concerned a little bit about Nunn guarding twos and not being quite a two size for some of these Devin Bookers, James Harden. You know, that could be a problem as far as him keeping on the court and crunch time against specific teams, a Mitchell, you know. But the Lakers team defense, I'm not worried too much. I just, you know, the physicality isn't there. Like with KCP is smaller, or, you know, a small two guard as well. So there's some similar concerns when he was switched on to some of those guys.
Yeah, I'd say if you're facing one of those guys who's a two guard but larger, and you're making like a lineup specific or a matchup specific tweak of this group, you take Nunn out, you slide Bazemore into the two, and then you can put, I mean, obviously you'd want to put LeBron in if you can, but if you're working with other players, you can put Melo in and slide Ariza up to the three and have Melo at the four, or you put Dwight in potentially, or Gasol in, like somewhere you're adding a three, a four, or a five, and sliding Bazemore from the three to the two and taking Nunn out. And I still think that group would be close to what this group does and just would be more prepared for those specific maybe playoff matchups.
Yeah, no, I really like this lineup. I think it makes sense in all kinds of different ways and all little tweaks, like Nunn, Bazemore, Ariza, Nunn, THT, Ariza. There's a lot of different things you can do with this. And we haven't used Ellington as a piece too much in this. I think he qualifies in that as well. His defense is concerning, but the uptick in spacing could make it worth it, you know, with certain matchups.
Yeah, in general, with a lot of these, like, Monk and Nunn offensively provide some similar things, or Monk and Ellington in a way provide some of that similar shooting, or like Ariza Melo offensively provide kind of stationary shooting. Bazemore's kind of within that group as well. So there are a number of players that are facsimiles of each other in specific ways, offensively or defensively, where like I can see maybe if the Lakers don't use some of these specific lineups, it'll be like this group with one small tweak for a guy who has a similar skill set, just in order to make it fit within their broader like lineup map. So everyone's playing like the right minutes and getting the right amount of rest.
Mm-hmm. Well, shout outs to Alex Regla. Thank you for letting us use your article to kind of base a pod on. I know you have a couple other lineups you wanted to go over really quickly. So talk to me about those.
Okay. So the first one is a Russ lineup that has Westbrook, Kendrick Nunn, Kent Bazemore, Trevor Ariza, Marc Gasol. It's similar to one we talked about earlier, but we've got, AD's not out there. You've got Ariza at the four, Gasol at the five. This is a group that doesn't have Monk. It doesn't have Melo. It doesn't have those guys that like might catch a kick out And then if the shot's not there, they say, okay, there's 14 seconds left. Time to, you know, it's me time. This is a group of guys that Russ and Gasol can run pick and pops with. We can get Russ going downhill, kicks it out. Either something's there, or if something's not there, you reset that and you go attack again with Russ. It's again Russell Westbrook with a pick and pop partner with spacing all around him. This group, like several others we've talked about, would have been the top spaced Laker lineup last season. The secondary playmaking with Kendrick Nunn is nice to have. If you put Monk in there, similar thing with him. This group would have been the second best playmaking lineup for the Lakers last season in non-LeBron minutes. And then defensively, this is a group you can probably catch hedge with. And you've got some good rotators out there between Ariza and Nunn. Or in theory, you can run like a no man behind drop with Gasol. And you've got some three of the Lakers' four best like back pressure guards in this group as well. So no matter which route you go defensively, this isn't like a switch everything group, but either of those other two scheme coverages, pick and roll coverages, I think can make sense as well. So I see it working well and being very much a like Russ is going to go just fill the box score up with these other four guys that will 100% defer to him.
Yeah, I like this one as well. You know, knock on wood, Mark comes back because he can be useful. Gosh, we're going to have to get another five if Mark, you know, retires or decides not to play. There's no doubt about it. It's not, it can't just be Dwight and AD. Unless you want to run crazy small ball lineups with Ariza at the five, which I don't see working particularly well. Yeah. I mean, maybe you can do it with Russ in there rebounding, but I doubt it. You know, it's not, people are just going to get to the rim, you know?
Yeah.
Easily.
What do you think of, and he's not a rim protector, but what do you think of DeMarcus Cousins being the closest Mark replacement to do what Mark does in terms of having some playmaking and being a spacer? Defensively, he's not a great defensive guy, but he's more of a defensive big in the way Andre Drummond is, where he like generates turnovers and plays passing lanes and strips balls and rebounds really well. And over the past several years, he has had a positive defensive impact. So it's not that he's just not a good defender because he's not a good rim protector. But how would you feel about that if Mark decides to retire or something and like Paul Millsap or somebody of that caliber isn't available?
I mean, yeah, definitely more interested in Paul Millsap, who looks like he's probably just going to wait until he can get a better deal, you know, when the opportunity opens up. Boogie, man. I don't know. So it does fit a couple of things. I think the Lakers could or would do it in the sense of he's played for the team before. Yeah. That's how they do things.
And stuck around with the team that year. Even after he was injured, like it wasn't, he came in for a week, got hurt and left. He came in, got hurt, never really played a game, but was around the team and part of the culture. So I think that if we're trying to look at the team's tendencies and what they might do, Rondo's someone I feel might come over, and Boogie's someone that I think has a decent chance if Mark isn't back.
I mean, I guess Boogie did have a quick moment in that Utah series against Derek Favors. I think he had a shift where he scored a bunch of points, and it wasn't from three. It was posting up, funnily enough. But I don't really see him in any kind of closing or any kind of playoff lineups as any kind of reasonable option where I could see Mark at least for some stretches. So that doesn't change, I guess, just a person who can play the five in four minutes in a big game to give you a very specific thing in rim protection. You know what I mean? Like that is what we're missing. Otherwise it's just Dwight and AD.
Yeah. I mean, given who's available, like I think grabbing a spacing guy if Mark isn't back would be important because you have the dump off guy in Dwight. You have AD and what he's able to provide and be a switchable dude. I think having a spacer is a good just card to have in your hand. And if Mark's gone, you don't have that unless you bring Boogie in. Again, Millsap would kind of fit this as well, but Boogie's been a better shooter than him. So I do think that in the playoffs, he wouldn't really play all that much. He might give you 5 minutes, but I am not expecting Gasol to play big playoff minutes either. I think AD's in the regular season, maybe you play 24 minutes at the center. In the playoffs, maybe you play 30 minutes at the center, 35 minutes. And then Dwight fills the rest. And I would feel okay going into the playoffs with those two as my like primary guys, knowing that like Gasol's there in case I need him or Boogie's there in case I need him. But if you just have nobody, then I don't feel great about getting through 82 games with just those two options. I think that's that you need that regular season innings eater, and the spacing and the playmaking is there enough that I think they can, I don't know. It's the easiest pivot to me, even though there are plenty of holes in this game.
Yeah. And it's the one that probably makes the most sense in Lakers logic. Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. So back to these lineups, plug him in for Gasol, and it's, at least within this lineup creator tool, it's going to end up looking similar. It's going to say he's spacing the floor and he's got some playmaking, and you know the finishing at the rim is all right. It's not going to be happening a ton, and the getting to the rim, I don't know if that's a big factor with him, given how the Lakers would use him. But my second group, and I love this one. I think this should be like the top second unit for the Lakers. Russell Westbrook, Kendrick Nunn, Kent Bazemore, AD, and Gasol. It would have the best playmaking of any lineup we've covered today or the Lakers had last season. It would have the best finishing at the rim of any lineup we've covered today or any non-LeBron lineup last season. It would have the fourth best spacing versus lineups last season. And if we just – I looked through our entire lineup database going back years and years, looking for groups that matched the playmaking, 96 percentile playmaking, 96th percentile scoring at the rim, and 91st percentile spacing, of the 12,621 lineups in our database, only one matched those, and it played for 2 minutes, and it was Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn, Goran Dragic, Jimmy Butler, and Kelly Olynyk. Not a perfect lineup, of course. No one's like, oh, damn, you just, you know, that's the Death Star of lineups. But in terms of, like, spacing, playmaking, scoring at the rim, this Laker group would be putting out a group that would be just about unmatched compared to what teams have done in the past. And I think that's pretty cool. And LeBron's not even in it.
I mean, this also again fits the Laker logic of the kind of lineup that you would put in because AD doesn't like playing the five. And that's still true, even though we've heard he's willing to play more or they're trying to get him to play more. As of right now, with, you know, we're just speculating on all of these, right? Mm-hmm. We're speculating based on past history and just kind of our gut feeling. So as far as what the Lakers are going to do, it's going to be a version of something we've discussed today because we've kind of talked about different angles and you know, it's going to be close, but this is something that stands out to me is if Mark comes back, like likely, you know what I mean? You could see Mark and you start Russ, Baze, LeBron, AD, Dwight. Okay, that's your starting five. 6 minutes in the first, you have Mark and Ariza check in for LeBron Mark and Nunn check in for LeBron and Dwight. So you basically get to this lineup for the last 6 minutes of the first, somewhere in there. You know, you probably have one more sub halfway through that for the other starter. Mm-hmm. You know, to come off, maybe you bring Russ out and put somebody else, the THT, in for 3 minutes. And that's kind of what your rotation starts to come out looking like.
Yeah. And I think this is a group that like Russ will start, AD will start. I think Nunn's in the running. I think Bazemore's in the running. And sure, I think Gasol's in the running. I don't know that not all three of them will start, but there's a chance one or two of them does. So it's similar to what you're talking about. This is definitely a group, no matter how you slice and dice it, no matter which of these, maybe Dwight starts, maybe he doesn't. Maybe Monk starts or Ellington starts, whoever. You're very close to getting to this group from either your opening or your closing lineup. And because of that, I see it having plenty of opportunity to play. And if you can go from a starting group to this group and just kill it for the whole first quarter, I think that's awesome. And I think that would set the team up well. And then you throw out a group that has Monk and Ellington and Dwight and Russ and Melo from this group, and you rest four of the five guys that were in here. Or sorry, no, we'll throw LeBron in there. Why not? There's so many possibilities, and like the Lakers are going to use some of these groups. They're not going to use some of these groups, but it's so easy when coming up with these to find groups that lead into other groups in a good way that I feel a lot more comfortable about the rotation in general and about those non-LeBron minutes this year than I did last year and the year before. I think there's a chance that this group, instead of being a minus 15 or minus 20 net rating with LeBron and AD both sitting, they can be like close to zero, and with like Russ and AD out there together but no LeBron, be like a plus 8 or something like that. And those things matter, because even if like the top end of this group or their starting group isn't world beating, if throughout 48 minutes you're throwing out viable good groups that are going to go beat up on backup units, you're going to have a really solid team. So I overall feel really, really good about what we've looked at today and what the Lakers are going to look like if they stay healthy.
Yeah. Big if, hopefully, knock on wood again. All right, Tim, it's time to get to your award winner. I will say, before we hopped on, I did watch some film of him, and it looks like your perennial Ian Clark guy who does some things and then hits the side of the backboard. So who's your guy? My guy.
My God, I don't know what I don't know what to call this. My bargain bin player of the year, the BBPOY. I don't know. Tom's shaking his head. I'm going to go Frank Ntilikina. Here's why. He certainly has holes in his game. He was kind of buried in New York this past year, behind their rising solid player in Emmanuel Quickley, and then Derrick Rose, who was obviously going to play, and then also Elfrid Payton, who somehow played and nobody liked it, and the Knicks fans and analysts didn't like it, but there were some locker room politics going on, and Frank was a casualty of that. We didn't get to see him as much, but he is a legit defensive player with a 7'1 wingspan. He's 6'4, so he's not the tallest guy, but he has a 7'1 wingspan. He's an inch shorter than Bazemore with an inch longer wingspan. He can defend 1, 2, and 3 really well. His three-point shooting has been a big swing skill for him. He hasn't been a good perimeter shooter for his career, and he's not a playmaker. So if he's only defense, it's hard to get him on the court. This past season, on a relatively small sample, and then also in the Olympics, he shot really well on his threes, and his three-point form looked different, and it looked better. And I had long conversations in DMs with some Knicks folks who covered the team and have followed him for the past couple of years, and they felt, and many of them, two of them felt pretty strongly that, like, hey, there's something with this guy, and his shot form is different, and he is like 100% worth a shot. So if we're looking at grabbing a guy who's our like 14th man, 13th man, he's young, he's long, he's a like legit defender that could be a wing stopper, he could be a point of attack guy. I was throwing together our new defensive talent grade 2.0 today, just preliminary, super preliminary. He would have been a 99th percentile wing stopper from a talent standpoint when he played for the full season in 2019-2020. So like there's a ton of like defense we can trust. And if the shot's there at all, even if he's not like a great shooter, even if he's like an Alex Caruso shooter or a Trevor Ariza shooter, that is the type of guy that can play on this team. And the team just took a huge step back from a defensive standpoint with their backcourt. And he's someone that I think, you know, if you need someone out there for a couple of minutes to play some defense, or you need someone to take on a wing stopper role, he has done it. He's done it well. And I think he could do it with this team. And he's not going to be asked to playmake, which was something he would have needed to do in New York. So for us, you know, him only being good at a couple things is fine, in a way that for a lot of other teams, given they don't have the top end talent, isn't okay. So I think he's absolutely worth a shot and would outperform a minimum contract if he's given any sort of chance to play. And if his shot isn't there, you can cut him or he can sit on the bench. But he's going to play he's going to play great defense in practice. He's a good locker room guy. And like I see no real downside going after him, given who's available and the money and the role he'd have on the team.
Well, it's not downside on the Lakers' end. It's downside on his end. It's, you know, there's even still probably more. There's better opportunities for him to get on the court on a regular basis on several other teams.
But it is August 27th. So if it were if it were 3 weeks ago and free agency we're still kind of going along, I still agree with you, but the fact that he's around means that he may be willing to take something that, you know, it's not a guaranteed spot. But hey, if your shot falls and you play elite defense, there might be some minutes for you because we don't have wing depth and we have a lot of old guys.
It's and we're in LA. True. I can't argue that. It's I don't trust the shot form. I don't think he's particularly good at relocating or catching, you know, in a bad pass that's off to his left and getting into a comfortable shot shooting position. I think he takes some bad shots. Some, you know, again, this is on a Knicks team who is, you know, he's trying to unbury himself. So, yeah, 3-point, you know, swing pass with 18 on the shot clock that I have a little bit of space on. Yeah, I'm putting it up. So I'm not against it. Again, it's pretty hard for me to be against any of the last three rotation pieces on the Lakers. They have to make sense in a very specific area, right? They have to provide value at certain skill sets, and he does have that. I will give him that. He has the skill sets of defense, physicality, wing stopping, and maybe some 3-point shooting. And if that maybe does get him on a team, you know, he's going to shoot. He's going to be open. He's going to get good 3-point looks and play defense, which is, you know, on the ancillary, what you need around these teams, like these Lakers teams have had. So, yeah, in theory, I'll give you that. Is he, you know, going to outperform value? I think taking into context what he is and isn't asked to do, I think it's one of those pieces that's more valuable to the Lakers because of their situation and the player's skill set. So it's both, it's both conditions being met. And yes, I think technically he would be more valuable to the Lakers if he could find out, like, carve out some Avery Bradley type role without the ball handling. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he can be Ken Bazemore for this team. Offensively, you don't need to playmake. Sure,
I'm not convinced the shot's there. I'm not convinced the shot's there, but yes.
If the shot's there, he is your he's Ken Bazemore, sure. Basically. Like, defense, you know, not like a tall wing stopper, but a guy that can defend 1-3 well, that has some shooting, doesn't do much else offensively, has some athleticism. That's the style of guy he would be. If there's a 30% chance of that being the case, throw a dart. I mean, like, the upside is worth an end of the bench roster spot. If it doesn't work out that way, he's somebody that in practice is going to be hounding Malik Monk and Kendrick Nunn and making these guys, you know, improve their game on a day by day basis. So it's just worth the upside because you don't run into 99th percentile wing stoppers like for minimum contracts. That just does not happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not saying it'll work out, but there's a chance it works out and it's worth the chance. It's calculated risk.
I mean, what is clearly not working out, Wes Matthews, I'm assuming, is not returning to the Lakers based on all this time. Again, it is August, late August. 27? And yeah, he's not yet going to a team. It is what it is. I don't hate it. I also would have understood it if they brought him back. That contract alone is going to be like, I think it's $8 million. Or $5 million after the tax and you know, the veteran minimum number, which is higher. So, you know, that's just a part of it. He wasn't fantastic. He regressed shooting. Now, does history tell you he'll regress back? Probably. But yeah. I do feel he has lost a step. I feel he is not quite as impactful as we were hoping. And he's just another guy to have. Would I sign him? Sure. Again, for these last three spots, he does certain things that I could feel comfortable with. He is an NBA player, aging one.
He was one that was in our playoff rotation last year, which I don't think we should overlook. Like, he started the season off awful, so bad, really, really bad. And then from the point that we like started tracking our LeBron metric a couple months into the season until the end of the year, he was one of the highest risers among Laker players. And part of that is because he started so poorly, but he, once he got his groove, you know, we saw what it could look like. We just didn't see him string it together and the shot wasn't consistent, but his 3-point shot making over his career has been like B, 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 B plus, B minus, B, B, and then it goes to an F this past year. So odds, like if I had to bet money, it would be really smart to bet money and say that his 3-point shot will return next season on a team if he gets signed. And, you know, maybe that team will be the Lakers. I think his defense was fine. I do agree he's lost a step. But again, for a late rotation spot, as someone who could be like a depth wing in case someone goes down or a depth guard, I don't mind it. I don't mind betting on positive regression.
Yeah, I'm just like, 29 other teams could have him for the minimum and no one has. And, you know, that's just sometimes that's how the market plays out, where you probably could play a couple more years and teams just want to give this young guy, that young guy. This guy has been in here longer. We have to pay him. This guy's a bad contract. We took a pick for, you know, so a lot of you know, we're going to rehab his value, try and get stuff for him. I'm just saying it's not surprising to me. He's not back or on another NBA team. That isn't shocking to me, but we're not here to talk about Wes Matthews for all kinds of time, Tim. That is, I think, going to wrap it up for us today. Any other shots, ideas you want to get in about, you know, what the Lakers could do with these last roster spot or how they could use these non-LeBron lineups?
Last dart throw is James Ennis. He's somebody who turned into a 3-and-D guy last year after being neither of the two of those for the rest of his career. So it would very much be a dart throw. He's an older guy. So if they really like some of their like summer league dudes and they want to get them with this parent team practicing with the full coaching staff and getting that attention and playing against these like legit players every day, I can understand that. But if Ennis gives you anything close to what he did last season, where he was knocking threes down really well and he was a solid, versatile defender, like that's a huge value for an end of bench guy as well. But another one that like I am anticipating that he will return to his not good three and not good D form. But that's, I mean, it's a dart throw with some upside. So that would be the other one, but I'm not going to lose any sleep if they don't go after them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think it could be something like Rondo Bogey. I definitely think you'll probably see a big, but the uncertainty about Mark retiring opens up another roster spot. So I don't think they'll have all 15. I think they'll probably fill to 14 max just to give them one more spot and not have to spend that money. So
it's about the tax.
Yeah, it's 100%.
If they fill every spot they have and they need to cut somebody, they can cut somebody. If like Kevin Love gets bought out and they need to sign someone of that caliber, because they're not hard capped, they're able to cut and replace pretty easily. But from their perspective, I get it. It sucks from a fan standpoint, but I get it why they're like, there's no reason to go sign a minimum contract that, you know, for us actually costs like $8 million for a guy that we're never going to see play in a game that's like within 20 points.
Yeah.
So I'm anticipating they won't fill every spot. I would hope that they would, but I'm not betting on it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like they're going to go into the league year with 11 or 12 players. They'll probably add a couple other guys. But again, the later you do that in the season, the less of a tax bill you eventually get. So if we could see somebody signed in December, January, February, and then the buyout season, you know, you probably see them fill out either one more or that last spot, or maybe they go in with 13. I don't know. It's kind of a strength of having, you know, 12 playable NBA players. So.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is generally with a rotation, the like caliber of guy generally declines and declines. And by the time you reach a certain point on the roster, it's guys that you don't feel comfortable in the game. Mm-hmm. The Lakers have a group currently without filling the rest of their spots where they won't be able to play a playable player.
Yeah.
Like somebody, probably Ellington or Monk. We'll see if Monk's defense impresses Frank or not. But probably one of those two guys is going to be taking some DNPs, and that's like, I mean, it sucks for that player of that night, but the Lakers have more depth than they've had in the past in terms of like those later bench guys being someone that you could just plug in and you know exactly what they're going to give you, and they're going to give it to you at like a fairly high level.
Yep. Well, that's going to do it for us today. We'll come back next week. We'll still do pods here. We're coming up on our, I think our 1-year anniversary since we came back, Tim. I think it was mid-late September. Got you these hands, baby. Cash. I don't know where that came from, but you know, it's time to go. So any last thoughts, Tim?
I recorded a pod about the clutch situation with Nerlens Noel already, and I was like, I don't know if people want to listen to this or not, but I recorded it, so we're going to put it up. And if you have any interest in hearing about what's going on with that case, what it could mean for the Lakers, what it could mean for clutch, who are two different entities for those who, you know, confuse them sometimes. But I think it's a super interesting situation, and I was able to like brush off my own, my like old like law class notes, and throw some stuff together. So expect that in a few days.
Awesome. Armchair lawyers, nothing better. Be on the lookout for that, y'all. Until then, we'll talk to you next time.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.